live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Jeff Lagerman.
Welcome in. It is a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. That means Jeff Lagerman joining us here in studio. Mike Dempsey taking today and tomorrow off. It's a bye week for everybody, it seems, as the Jags get set for their week off in the middle of the season. But Jeff Lagerman's still here, going to take us to school, talk a little bit about what happened on Sunday with the Jags getting their first win in London, their second win on the season. And we talked about it a lot last week, Jeff, that it was just this team was at a point where it didn't matter how it happened. They just needed to find a way to win a football game, which is something they hadn't been able to do in that last month.
No, they needed it bad. I mean, for a lot of reasons. You know, the noise gets loud when you lose four consecutive games. You're trying to have some type of initiative over there in London to build a fan base, and you've committed to playing over there. Look, the Brits like underdogs, but, I mean, underdogs only last for so long when it comes to supporting a team over there. And I thought it played out really well. I mean, you know, the beginning of the game, what a great setting. Ohio State band, I mean, wow, they were fantastic. I know you didn't get a chance to see them, but they were unbelievable. Got a standing ovation from the fans at Wembley. Shad Khan got an honor before the game. He was right there front and center. And when you commit like that, you know, you'd like to have some validation of what you're doing over there and for the team to do that. And look, it wasn't in the greatest of fashion because it went from being possibly the greatest collapse in Jaguars history to being a much needed win. You know, so, I mean, the emotions just took you all over the place. I mean, all over the place in that game. And that's the great thing about football and being a fan. You know, I mean, your emotions are just all over the place. But at the end of the day, when you finally kind of feel good, it kind of makes it settle down a little bit.
Sure. And I think for the Jaguars fans, and I know there's a bunch over there who made their way to the game that live in that area.
Yeah, but you know what, Tony? The interesting
football
thing,
fans had to have a really good time with that game.
Oh, I mean, as far as watching a football game, I mean, does it get any better than that? I mean, it was fantastic. If you're not a fan of the Buffalo Bills, you're not a fan of the Jaguars, you're like, man, what an entertaining game.
Yeah.
You know, and that game was obviously groundbreaking in that it was the first game that was streamed over the internet. 15.2 million unique views. I think it was about 33 million devices that it was streamed on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about taking a huge step in expanding the fan base of the NFL to have, you know, over 20 countries that view this product. I mean, that's a big deal, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, this move is about money. You know, it's about money for the Jaguars. It's about money for the league. It's about expanding the league and its footprint all across the globe. And they certainly accomplished that. And I'm glad that they were able to do that with the Jaguars because, you know, now all of a sudden – you're getting fans that recognize the Jaguars, not just in London or in Great Britain, but, you know, in other countries as well. Because, you know, before the game, the NFL had, you know, Tony Boselli and Thurman Thomas and Jim Kelly and me, which kind of crazy to have me mentioned in those those names. But they, you know, you had a chance to be able to mingle with the fans. There was different events on Saturday. And then before the game, all those guys, including myself, were involved in different meet and greet type things with the fans, and it's not just Great Britain. I mean, it's countries all over Europe. I mean, because London is an easy flight for these people,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming from wherever, Poland or whatever. I mean, that was really cool to talk and to meet people, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to be outside the stadium before the game, to be able to see what the atmosphere was like and to be able to meet some different people from different countries. It was outstanding.
I know it's the third year you've gone over and done it. And look, I think from this side of the ocean, it feels like the game is gaining some traction over there in England. You're there every year. Do you feel like it is there too?
Yeah. The biggest thing that you can tell as far as the Jaguars gaining traction, you know, the first year that we went there, you didn't really see any Jaguars jerseys, you know, and all of a sudden this year, it was the predominant jersey, you know, and I think is the more years that you spend there with this one game that's played abroad and right there in London at Wembley, the fan base will continue to expand because, you know, they can kind of latch on to something and the fans over there know that, I mean, this is their team that gets to come over every year and they
right.
can have a little consistency in what they see, you know. So it's definitely expanding. There were a lot of Buffalo Bills jerseys, which is the first time I've ever seen a lot of Buffalo Bills jerseys, but I also know that Terry Pegula, the owner of the Buffalo Bills, flew the entire organization over there to spend time in London to see that game. And so I'm sure that, you know, I don't know how many hundreds that is that work for the Bills organization, but I'm sure it's quite a few.
Right. Yeah, and look, we got a lot to get into as far as the game itself, the uniqueness of this trip to London every year, and I don't know that you ever get used to it, right? I mean, I think they were trying to figure out a way to make it more like a business trip than a vacation, and maybe going in on Thursday helped them with that. Maybe the fact that Buffalo was missing half their offense probably helped them a
little bit. The reality of it is, Tony, is that good teams travel well. I don't care what the schedule is. I mean, if a team is good, you could leave the night before and arrive Sunday morning and walk off the plane and play football game, good teams are going to win. You know, but I definitely feel that it is better for this team to travel on a Thursday because it's more businesslike, you know, and whereas when you go there in years past, like we did, we arrived 1 year on a Monday. That was last year. The year before that was arriving on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of has more of a vacation type atmosphere, and you've got some idle time, and I'm not saying that the players during that idle time in the last 2 years were out goofing off, but it just changes the atmosphere a little bit. And it was perfect, I thought, because when you arrived there on Friday morning, you know, the players went right to the field and knocked out what they had to do. They had time to take a nap. And then I think the second day from talking to a few different players, the first day they felt crushed, you know, because you always feel that way after being on an airplane for 7.5 hours.
Sure.
And then the second day, the players said they felt a little bit sluggish. And then the ones that I talked to said on game day, they felt great. And I kind of felt the same way. You know, I mean, first day, I mean, I had to take like about a 3 hour nap because I hardly slept on the plane, got to bed good that night, slept good. Got the blood flowing a little bit on Saturday, and Sunday morning I felt great. So I'm not playing anymore, you know, but you know, and from talking to the players and how I felt, I mean, I thought it was perfect. I thought that's the fortunate thing is that they won, and for personal reasons, you know, that, you know, hey, look, I like going to London, but at the same time, I don't want to be over there for an entire week, you know, so to be selfish, I'm glad they won. I'm glad they traveled on Thursday. So in the future, it's probably going to be the schedule.
Yeah, the result was good. So I'm sure that's what they'll plan on doing again next year is the trip there on Thursday with their annual trek over there to London. We got a lot to get into with this game, looking back at the victory over the Buffalo Bills. Jeff Loggeman here with me in studio today. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Today we're asking, outside of Blake Bortles, what second or third year player's progress are you most encouraged by with this Jacksonville Jaguars team? The good news is there are a bunch of different guys that you could answer that question with, and we'll get into some of our thoughts on that a little bit later today. Want to get back to that goal line situation and them not being able to get in there at the beginning of the third quarter here in just a moment as we continue along. Jeff Loggeman here in studio with me, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey taking the day off. We'll continue as we go to school on Tuesday with Jeff Loggeman here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It'll be fourth and goal from just outside the goal line.
I'd go back to the first two plays they ran, and if I'm Greg Olsen, I'm telling Blake Bortles in his headset, tell Toby to follow Tyson.
Yes. They've had three cracks from inside the two. Now it's fourth and goal, about a foot away from the goal line.
And we're going on 9.5 minutes for this opening drive in the third quarter.
Three tight end set. I formation. Alo Alo lines up in front of Toby Gerhardt. Bortles under center. Takes it. Gives to Gerhardt. Gerhardt tries to bounce it outside. Leans toward the goal line. He did not get in. He did not get in. The ball is going to go over on downs at the half-yard line.
There it is. Fourth and goal, four times there from inside the two-yard line. The Jags unable to get into the end zone. They still found a way to win the game. Fat Tony along with Jeff Loggeman here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. And look, Jeff, I know for me watching the game, I would have gone for it too. I didn't have an issue with the Jags deciding in that moment to go for it. I think, you know, when they don't get it, you're thinking, all right, they could have made it a three-score game if they just kick a field goal in that situation, and really what kind of chance do the Bills have at that point? If you're up 17, you've run 9.5 minutes off the clock, it's deflating to wind up with 0 points on that drive, but none of that was what I was thinking on fourth down. I was thinking, get this thing into the end zone. What are you,
sure,
are
I mean,
you,
that's like the emotional
me?
Thing. You know,
yeah.
you miss three times, you're like, dadgummit, do it again and just score.
Yeah, and I know John Osher joined us yesterday, and I think he brought up a good point when it comes to that series in particular. I think the Jags want to be a team that is going to be able to run the ball when they want to run the ball. They have a plan in place for when they want to use Toby Gerhardt, even in a game where, look, T.J. Yeldon was running really well, and maybe he should have been given an opportunity. I think he should have been. After he missed the hole on second down for the second time in a row, I was watching going, why are you giving him two more shots at this thing?
Yeah, but, you know, hindsight's always perfect, you know, and that you say, okay. You know, if you detach from the emotion of the game, which I think sometimes that's what you need to do when you're making that decision, is that you kick the field goal.
Yeah.
You know, because it makes it a three-possession game. But that's hard to do. It's hard to detach from the emotion of the game, and that you're trying to establish an identity. You're trying to be bold and everything else. You know, but I also agree that, you know, you've got to maybe look at different options on your short yardage package. Toby has not looked the same that he did in the preseason, and I think it's related to the injury that he suffered in the preseason that was, you know, whether it been an oblique or an abdominal injury, whatever it is, he's not the same. He's not running with the same type of power. That obviously doesn't affect where he runs, but TJ's been pretty good, you know, but you need to be better up front in that situation. You know, you got to be able to get more push on the backside. You got to have the running back go in the right hole. You know, but I thought that the first two plays, you go to the right side, and then the third one, you kind of go back, and then you try the left side, and I don't really like that, and that, you know, the right side is definitely stronger than the left side. You know, I like Luke Joelke. I think he's an excellent run blocker, and he blocks with power. I'm not a big fan of Zane in the short yardage package. I also think that they probably are going to take a good hard look at it, but, you know, but I also understand why they're doing that. I mean, go back to the preseason when we saw them run at will in every short yardage, you know, possibility that they had, and they were hammering people. You know, so their idea is that, look, we did this before, and we were dominant before when we did it, and let's just get back to it. So I appreciate why they make the decision. But I also think that now that you've had a chance to look at it, I think things are going to be a little bit different for the second half of the season.
You would think, and it took them a while, and we saw them in this game kind of give in to the idea that they needed to blitz if they were going to find a way to get to the quarterback. I mean, it took until this game until it felt like they were really committed to doing those kinds of things and bringing more than four-man pressures.
It's easy to do it in this game, Tony. You know, I mean, you look at what you're facing, you know.
No, I get that too, yeah.
You know, I mean, because, you know, everybody was saying, well, you got to blitz more, you got to blitz more, you got to blitz more. You know, you got to bring more pressure. Well, yeah, you want to be able to bring more pressure, but you also have to have the ability to do that based upon what you see in the opponent's offense. And the Buffalo Bills are missing two wide receivers. They're missing a guard and a tackle. Backup quarterback is in the game. So it makes it a little bit easier to be a little bit more aggressive against the Buffalo Bills because they are missing a lot of frontline guys. I mean, they're missing five starters out of the 11 that they have on offense. So is this going to be what we see every week? I don't know about that. You know, I still think we're going to see more pressure packages, but I really like the creativity that they had in this game. You know, you go to the Aaron Colvin sack cause fumble, and I showed this last night on Jaguars All Access. They actually only had a three-down look. They brought in Sergio Brown as a third safety, so they had an extra DB on the field minus a defensive lineman,
mm-hmm.
And they got creative. You know, they showed that they were going to be coming from the defensive left side, and at the last second, Sergio flops sides. Telvin Smith has walked up on the left side, so Sergio goes to the other side and comes with Colvin. And it was perfect because the Buffalo Bills line call was to slide to Telvin and Sergio where they originally lined up at. And then all of a sudden, now you've got LeSean McCoy trying to block two guys. I mean, that's your goal as a defensive coordinator is to get the mismatch, you know, or to give yourself the best chance to be able to get there, and they got it. You know, it was absolutely perfect. Now, will every team, you know, look at that in the future and say, okay, well, the last time that they showed this, you know, that's the challenging part for a defensive coordinator. You know, and I think that week to week, you've got to be able to look at it and say, you know, what gives us the best chance for success? Is it bringing more pressure? You know, if you're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, hell no. You're not going to do that because the Cincinnati Bengals have too many weapons. But if you're playing a team like Houston, which is out without Arian Foster and has, you know, quarterback that's not so good, or Indianapolis Colts that doesn't have Andrew Luck. I think in hindsight, you look back at some of those games and you say, you know, maybe we should have brought more pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I said it after the game. I thought it was the most well-designed blitz that they've run all year, was the one that they got with Colvin coming off the edge. And it obviously turned into the turnover and 7 points. When you look at this team, though, it took a while for them to get to that point where they, it felt like, made that adjustment that, all right, and even if it was the matchup, determine this a little bit too. You heard Gus Bradley talk about it last week. We know we got to blitz a little bit more if we're going to get any kind of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. I hope it, they don't have that same kind of, it takes that long to figure out what's going on in short yardage, because it feels like it's time for TJ Yeldon to either get a shot at those kinds of plays, because he, especially in a game like Sunday where he was running so well, or for them to just let Blake throw it and do something else in that situation, because to this point, when Toby's been on the field, they have not been effective in short yardage.
No, and I go back to what I talked about a little bit ago, and that, you know, I don't know if Toby's healthy. You know, you watch him when he runs the ball, and he's running okay. You know, you watch Toby when he's in punt protection, and he's not violent when he's on the wing, and then once he blocks, he's not delivering a blow, and then you don't see any speed running down the field. So I wonder, you know, how healthy is Toby Gerhardt? Because what we saw in the preseason was, got us excited that, okay, this is the guy that we thought we would see last year, and then we saw it in the preseason, and then he got the injury, and he missed the first couple weeks, and then all of a sudden we're not seeing it now. You know, so I think it's definitely something that they'll take a look at, and whether they allow TJ to continue to stay on the field and convert those, or have an opportunity at converting those, or they look at maybe Bernard Pierce, because Bernard Pierce is a heavy runner. You know, he's got a lot of power too, even though sometimes he gets confused on punt coverage. but, you know, he's a powerful running back. So, you know, I also understand, you know, the disappointment in that, because it didn't work. And that's when things don't work. You know, it goes back to the thing, you know, and Gus talks about this, and it's very true, that you trust up until you've been proven unreliable. And I think that at this point now, you probably start to think that it's not reliable to have that package with Toby on the field. Maybe look at different options.
Yeah, and I know for me, like I said, I would have taken him off the field after second down when he missed the hole for the second consecutive play. And I certainly wouldn't have put him back on the field on third and one later in the game. And when they put him back out there and had to call the timeout because of a substitution problem that they were having. And then I was sitting here watching the game with Mike, and I told him, I was like, if I'm Rex Ryan in the Bills, I'm saying to myself, there's no way they're giving the ball to Toby Gerhardt. They're going to try to trick us with something here. I don't know if it's going to be they're going to throw out of this formation, or they're going to hand it to Tyson Alualu out of this formation. But the one thing I knew wasn't going to happen was Toby Gerhardt was going to get the ball. And they wound up trying to trick him with Tyson Alualu getting it. And Buffalo was clearly ready for that play in that situation where they got blown up again in short yardage.
Well, they had a good call. I mean, they were kind of packing the inside of the formation to where they were playing for a sneak, or obviously looking at what they ran at the goal line, which was where Toby went inside on the first two and really should have kind of bumped out to the outside a little bit. So, I mean, their call was good, good for them, you know, and now you look at some different options, you know. But, you know, when you go into a game like that, you prepare packages with certain personnel, you know, and I think that we will see something different coming out.
I don't doubt it at all. And talking about the Jags running game, Yeldon, I thought, had his best day as a Jaguars running back. He made guys miss.
Boy, it was big having him. But, yeah. I mean, but not just about the run game. And I had talked about this last week, and that if there was ever a week that you would like to get TJ back, and not so much because of his ability to run the ball, but going into a game against a team that loves to blitz young quarterbacks. TJ is the best blitz pickup back that the Jaguars have. He's one of the best players that I've ever seen as a rookie come into the league and have the impact and pass protection that he's had. He's been outstanding. He's aware. He's strong. He is powerful. And that's kind of reminds me a little bit of Greg Jones, you know, because Greg Jones, and he's still here, obviously, he's a volunteer coach. When Greg Jones was here, he had a great awareness blocking as a fullback. And TJ has a little bit of that. But that really wasn't the scouting report on him when he was at Alabama. That's not something that people thought, you know, that he did really well. So, I mean, kudos to TJ, and then also to the running backs coach, Kelly Skipper, for doing a great job of coaching him up. Because you can't play unless you can blitz pickup.
Right. And it's nice to have a guy that you feel like you can be confident with for three downs out there,
I think
too.
That's a position that will have a a major makeover after this year. I think next year, I think you could see Toby moved out. I think Bernard Pierce could be moved out. And I think that Donard Robinson will continue to have a role. And I think that obviously TJ will continue to be your starter. But I think that that's a position that you look at in the future of saying we need to do something better here. Because, you know, when you look at that position, that is a position that has to be able to have role players once you get beyond the starter.
Mm-hmm.
And are you seeing any roles being filled? You're not. You know, and I'm talking roles on offense and then roles on special teams. Has any of the running backs really flashed, with the exception of Deion Grant as a kick returner? Has anybody really flashed on the core four, which is kickoff return, punt, and punt return, and you're not getting a lot of production there?
No, you're not. And, you know, unless I had seen Denard Robinson telling Nick Marshall to stay in the end zone on a couple of kicks, I wouldn't have known Denard was active
right
for this game. I know it was kind of a weird game because they had the back-to-back defensive scores and the turnovers, and Yeldon was running well enough that maybe they just never felt like they needed to spell TJ Yeldon at all. They just subbed Toby Gerhardt in when they were doing short yardage, but to not see Denard get any real offensive snaps was odd.
Well, it's not odd to me, because last week when he had his opportunity, he didn't look explosive. He didn't look like it was the Denard of old. So, you know, I think you got to have, as a coach, you've got to have something that you've seen to be able to go, okay, we need to get him some snaps. You got to earn them, you know, plain and simple. And Denard last week here against the Texans didn't really show that he was ready to rock and roll. He showed that he could play, but not that he could be effective or be a player that's going to have an impact. So I think in the future, you know, if he proves that he's getting healthy and he's getting some of that explosion back and running with power that we saw him run mm-hmm. before the knee injury, you know, then until he shows that, then he's not going to get a lot of snaps.
Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today. Tori over in Orange Park wants to talk a little bit about Toby Gerhardt. What's going on today, Tori?
I'm doing good. Thank you, gentlemen, for getting to me. I just want to ask you a question, and this is just it comes down to personnel. And I need you guys to give me some type of information on this. I mean, Toby Gerhardt has really not contributed to this team since he's been here. And to use him in four straight downs shows me that Dave Caldwell doesn't want to say that he made a mistake. I mean, just give me some information on this. I'm trying to understand.
Well, I
appreciate the call, Tori.
First of all, letting, you know, or having Toby Gerhardt out there for four straight downs doesn't have anything to do with Dave Caldwell.
No.
I mean, that's a coaching decision. You know, so, and I go back to, and I don't know if you didn't hear what I said earlier, and that, you know, in the preseason, that was one of the things that you got excited about, was Toby Gerhardt following Tyson Alualu. It was dominant in the preseason. So I think that they were expecting that it would get back to that point, and it's not. So now at this point, you adapt and adjust, and I think that they will do that.
I want to talk about the offensive line when we get back here in a moment, Jeff. We talked a lot about the running backs. TJ Yeldon obviously had a good day on Sunday. We haven't talked about Blake Bortles yet either, and his performance felt a little up and down, but we'll get to that here in just a moment.
That pick six was terrible.
Oh, my goodness. But we'll get to that. Jeff Loggeman joining us here on a Tuesday. It is a Jaguars Today. We go to school today. Kenny Lay and Associates bringing it to you, men only, familylawonly.com. More with Jeff Loggeman, myself, Fat Tony, here on Jaguars Today next here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reisch Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
A Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. Fat Tony here with you. Jeff Loggeman in studio as we take a look back at the Jaguars win over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday over there in London. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you today, Jaguars fans, outside of Blake Bortles, what second or third year player and his progress are you most encouraged by to this point in the 2015 season? A lot of potential answers to that question. We'll get to some of our thoughts on that a little bit later on, but you can send in your answers at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, as well as at 1010XL Tyler. And we'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on today in the program as well. Going to get back out to the phone lines here in just a minute, but we've been talking a lot about the running backs for this team on Sunday and the disappointment with Toby Gerhart and his inability to get into the end zone on those four plays, and a good day from T.J. Yeldon. What about the offensive line? What was good? What was bad with the guys up front on Sunday, Jeff?
Well, I thought it was overall a pretty strong performance. You know, you got a running back who rushes for 115 yards and averages, you know, almost 6 yards a carry. That's strong. You allow two sacks against a team that has some great players now. I mean, Mario Williams, when he turns it on, might be the best pass rusher in the league when he turns it on. But the problem with Mario and why he's never been the best pass rusher in the league, he doesn't turn it on all the time.
Right.
Now, Jerry Hughes is a guy that went from a bust to being a really good player. And he plays the game with power. He plays the game physical. And when he was at Indianapolis, he didn't do any of that. You know, and for some reason, I don't know what he did, but he's a good player now. And Marcell Dareus, probably one of the best inside guys in the league. His numbers certainly speak to that because he's right up there with Geno Atkins. When you look over the last couple of years, the number of sacks, they were missing Kyle Williams, but some of the backups are capable. I thought Parnell did a really good job against Mario Williams. You know, Mario got a little bit of leakage here and there, but for the most part, Parnell did a really good job. A.J. Cann has had three consecutive weeks where he's played really well. I mean, really well. He's impressive now. I mean, he's a young player that has not played on the right side, and to come in and play against the talent level that he's played at, pretty good. LeSean McCoy, J.J. Watt, Marcell Dareus. You know, that's not exactly an easy lineup for a young player, and he's done very well. Wisniewski continues to play well. Beatles does, you know, Beatles is kind of, I kind of get conflicted with him sometimes because I think he's doing a really good job in pass protection for the most part. But his run blocking, it leaves a lot to be desired. You know, I think at times he's soft. He gets moved a little bit. When he pulls, he's not getting up to the second level. I would not be surprised, you know, if Brandon Linder is healthy and he's playing, I think he's already out of the lineup right now. And I would not be surprised at some point if Tyler Shatley shows or Luke Bowanko shows that they're ready to go, that they may look at either one of them. And I think that Tyler Shatley would get the first look because Tyler Shatley had a very good preseason. He played very strong. So maybe something happens there. I don't know. But that's one of those things where if you want to get better, that's one area you can get better. I thought Luke Jokel did a good job. He got pushed back a couple times and gave up some late pressure. But, you know, the nice thing that we're not seeing with Luke that we saw in years past is the whiffs. You know, where all of a sudden his head is down and he's lunging and all of a sudden the quarterback is getting drilled. You're not seeing that. He's playing upright. He's trusting his feet. He's a little soft at times, but I think he's getting better, and that's a positive sign. So overall, I thought it was a very good grade for the offensive line against the challenging defense now because when they blitz, they do a lot of unconventional things, and they handled it for the most part.
Speaking specifically about Luke Jokel, one of the things we talked about throughout the last year or so and in the preseason is his problems handling power. Is he doing a better job with that?
Yeah, like I said, he's getting pushed a little bit, but he's not getting pushed like he used to. And so I think he's learning. You know, he's learning, and it's kind of easy to forget that, you know, he had an ankle injury earlier this year. And so I think he's doing a better job with it. I think there's definitely progress being made. I still want to see him continue to take steps because there's no questioning his athletic ability. You know, so you know that he's capable of being better, and you hope that he's one of those players that just it takes time. I mean, when you look at, like, Russell Okung in Seattle, first couple of years now, Russell Okung was not good. I mean, Russell Okung was considered kind of a bust. And then Russell eventually ended up developing, and now he's one of the best left tackles in the game. I'm not saying that Luke Jokel is going to be that, but I think that he's showing signs that you want to see and that is encouraging and that he's getting better.
No, and it's good to hear, especially if he's getting better with – using some of the athleticism that I know when we talked to you and Baselli and a lot of you guys, you talk about it being there, and it was like he didn't know how to use it. And if he's learning how to a little bit more, that can only help him. And it's kind of like a picture of this entire team in a way, isn't it, Jeff, where it's still a young team that's trying to figure out a lot of things on the run here. And not trusting everything about themselves. And that, more than anything, is why I thought it was so important for them to find some way to win this game against Buffalo. Especially, we talk about the adversity with Blake Bortles, and he's brought a lot of it on himself since he's been here with the pick sixes that he's thrown. He threw another one on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And with the combination of the last 4 weeks and the way it's gone for the Jags and the different ways they found to lose football games, and to get that 24-point lead and to watch it evaporate and eventually go away because your quarterback threw another pick six, to watch them pick it up and recover from there, we haven't seen that out of
this team. No, that's amazing. I thought that was great for the team to have, but to go back and to kind of finish up on your comments about Luke Joeckel, he's 23. You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to think about that, you know, I mean, because, you know, he's in his third year, and most people don't think of a third-year player as being young.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's 23 years old, you know, so, you know, as long as you keep seeing the progress there, he's 23 years old. He obviously came out early, and he was young going into Texas A&M, played right away, you know, so there's some upside there. The adversity that they faced, which we at first were thinking this could be the greatest collapse in Jaguars regular season history.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what it was, because when you did not score on the goal line with first and goal at about the 1.5 yard line, you know, offensively you had three consecutive three and outs, and then all of a sudden you had to pick six. And the ability to be able to bounce back from that, I think, shows a tremendous level of toughness about a team and toughness with young players. You know, Blake Bortles is 23, Allen Hurns is 23, Allen Robinson is 22. You know, I mean, that to me, I mean, as much as it was disappointing, is as much as excited you got about the way that they were able to bounce back and put a drive together. And I've always said this about Blake Bortles. I love the way that he has the ability to elevate his level of play at a critical moment. We've seen it last year in the two-minute drill. I mean, to the point where a lot of people are saying they're so successful at it, why don't they do it more during the regular part of the game? I mean, that's a pretty amazing statement to talk about when you're talking about a quarterback who just started his 20th game. You know, so I thought that was tremendous. Blake made some bold throws. The one that he made where Allen Robinson caught it right over the shoulder of Darby, the cornerback, the rookie from Florida State. I mean, what a great catch, but what a bold throw that he made. The throw to Allen Robinson was right on the money on the deep end. I think that was for about 19, 20 yards. The throw to Allen Hurns where he kind of extended the play because it was a racer route to where Allen Hurns was coming from the far side of the field all the way across the field, and he knew that that's what he wanted, but it needed time to develop. And he kind of shuffles down, and he literally had great awareness to where the line of scrimmage was and to be able to let that ball go when he was right at the line of scrimmage and to make that accurate of a throw on the run. Wow, and what a catch. I mean, what a catch by Allen Hurns.
Yeah, we've seen him throw that ball high a lot. You know, in that kind of situation where he's kind of moving towards the line of scrimmage and he just puts a little bit too much on it, that one
beautiful
he
touch
threw
throw.
Really well.
Beautiful touch throw. And that's the one thing that they saw out of him when he was at UCF is the ability to be accurate on the run. That was his greatest trait, was accuracy on the run. And that's a perfect example of it.
No doubt about it. Let's get out to the phone lines again, 641-1010. You can also get in on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line at that same number, 641-1010. Let's go to Sebastian in St. John's. Wants to talk a little bit about Julius Thomas. What's going on today, Sebastian?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Jeff, I just had a question about Julius Thomas. It seems like he had a hard time getting involved against Buffalo, and mainly the thing that concerned me was on that critical drive where they ended up scoring. They threw a long ball to him, and he kind of gave up on the route and then went and sat on the bench. And I was just curious as to what you think happened there and why they've been having a hard time getting him involved. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, sure. And great awareness and great comment, because that's what happened on that one. As far as when he was running the deep route, you could see that he pulled up. And it was some type of muscle that cramped up on him. I don't think it's a pull, but it was more of a cramp situation. And he couldn't finish the route. You know, he just couldn't finish the route, and then it tightened up on him, and that's why he was off the field at the end of that ball game. So, but that's one area, though, that it looked so good in the preseason when we saw him in practices, because remember, he got hurt in the first preseason game. And then all of a sudden you have essentially 8-9 weeks to where they don't get the opportunity to create any chemistry because they're not working together. And you can still tell that clearly they don't have the chemistry that they need to have or that they will have. I think that when you look at Julius Thomas, he's one of those guys that you've got to learn to trust because he's not going to get great separation. It's very similar, I think, to Allen Hurns, and that Allen Hurns gets separation, but it's not great a lot of times. But Blake trusts him. And you have to get to the point as a quarterback to where you trust the guy, and it's going to take some time to develop that trust. And then it's also going to take some more time for them to have the chemistry when, just like the stick route that we saw that went for a pick six against Houston. You know, all of a sudden, Julius Thomas, and a stick route is when a guy runs down the field 5 or 6 yards and just stops and turns around, and he either turns inside or he turns outside. Well, Julius on the pick six against Houston turns inside. Blake throws it to the outside.
Yeah.
You know, and those are things that repetitions and time spent together will solve a lot of those issues. And I expect that to improve drastically as we get in the second half of the season.
We need to step aside, but Julius has been back for the last 3 games. Have you noticed, watching the All-22, anything different in the way defenses are approaching this Jags offense?
They doubled Julius in the Buffalo game. Wow. I mean, you know, that's very rare for a guy that typically, for a defensive coordinator to legitimize doubling a guy, the production has to be there before you start to commit to that. And Julius, he had, you know, a nice game against Houston, even though that two interceptions he was targeted on.
Sure.
But it's not very common that, you know, because it has to happen week after week after week for a team to be able to do that against Julius Thomas. Well, the Buffalo Bills gave him great respect and doubled him up in a lot of cases. But that just gave more opportunities to Allen Robinson, and it gave more opportunity to Brian Walter, and it gave a little more opportunity to Allen Hurns.
No, and hopefully that continues for those guys and Julius Thomas. Whatever injury that happens to be, hopefully it's not anything serious. It's going to cost them anything. They do have the bye week, so everybody has a chance to get a little bit more healthy this week. It is a Tuesday here on Jaguars Today, the fan feedback spotlight asking you Jaguars fans, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Besides Blake Bortles, take him out of the equation, but what second or third year player are you most encouraged to see their progress to this point in the 2015 season? We'll get to some of our answers a little bit later on at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at Logs56, at 1010XL Tyler on Twitter, as well as the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll get to some of your responses later on in the show as well. This date in football history and the Honda driver around the NFL coming up next right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCaw's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. A couple of birthdays on this date. Chicago Bears linebacker, guard, and defensive tackle Bill George, born on this date in 1929. He was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1974. Former Jacksonville Jaguars cornerback Will Blackman, Unc, turns 31 years old today, so happy birthday to Mr. Blackman. And finally, Dallas running back Emmitt Smith, on this date in 2002, I believe it was, rushed for 109 yards to surpass Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time leading rusher. He finished that season with a career number of 17,162 yards, still the leading rusher in NFL history, Emmitt Smith. And it seems reasonable to talk about him in a little bit on Florida Georgia Week here in Jacksonville, Florida. That is this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, guys, last night on Monday Night Football, the Cardinals held on to beat the Ravens 26-18 in Phoenix. Baltimore was driving to get it within 4 yards of scoring the possible tying touchdown with a two-point conversion, but Joe Flacco was intercepted trying to throw it up to his tight end Crockett Gilmore. But the head coach John Harbaugh said post-game they were having issues communicating the plays on the headsets on the final drive. That's the second coach to complain of headset issues this week. The Jags' opponent, the Bills, and their head coach, Buffalo's Rex Ryan, was complaining about it with the same issues over in London.
Oh yeah, it was unbelievable. Static had everything. Static had where you couldn't hear anything. Frustrating time, obviously, in those circumstances. That's why you saw EJ having to come run over and get the call with Greg trying to yell it into him quite a few times.
Well, a funny detail to that story, guys. Pro Football Talk reported a source within the knowledge of the situation. The system wasn't working because the Bills weren't using fully charged batteries. Another story here, the Lions head coach Jim Caldwell knows he has to shake up things as Detroit dropped to 1-6 after losing to the Vikings on Sunday. Well, Caldwell made a move. He fired his offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi. On Monday, the team announced the Lions also fired offensive line coaches Jeremiah Washburn and Terry Heffernan. Caldwell also confirmed that the next offensive coordinator, and get this, guys, possibly the guy with the greatest name in all of football, Jim Bob Cooter. And one final story here, Greg Hardy will not be disciplined for his sideline tirade, which saw cameras slap the clipboard of the Cowboys special teams coach away on the sideline. NFL.com says Hardy didn't show up to practice last week on Thursday, forcing Dallas officials to call around and see what was going on with Hardy. Later on in the day, the Cowboys said Hardy was ill. That was the official reason he missed practice. And on 105.3 The Fan this morning, Jerry Jones reiterated that the Cowboys want to sign Greg Hardy to a long-term deal.
I'm sure they do. I don't think there's any player in the NFL that when I see him on a field, it aggravates me more than Greg Hardy.
Well, he's got some past issues. I think the thing that's most disappointing is that Jerry Jones almost seems like a Greg Hardy apologist. You know, but I mean, that's what Jerry's always done. You know, he's backed the players regardless. And I think in this case, I think Jerry Jones needs to allow a little bit of the criticisms to continue because Greg Hardy clearly is got some issues.
No, he does. And look, I know people, every time that a running back job comes open right now, people say, well, Ray Rice is still available. And is he being kept out of the league because of the issue? I think he's being kept out of the league in part because of the issue and in part because he wasn't any good.
Well, he wasn't playing well at the end. You know, I mean, he was averaging like 3 yards a carry or less, I think, you know, so.
If he was playing Adrian Peterson, he'd be in the league.
But Greg Hardy is a great pass rusher,
right.
You know, so it's the way it is. I mean, you get your patience levels a little bit higher with a great player, and Greg Hardy is a great player. I mean, the guy can flat out rush the passer. He's a dominant player. And the Dallas Cowboys are looking at a window of opportunity that looks like it could be closing.
Yeah.
So they're willing to gamble a little bit, and I get it.
They are. They're willing to gamble a little bit, and Jerry Jones continues to back his guys.
That's Jerry.
He also said that, and why Jerry Jones is the guy announcing this, Darren McFadden will be the starter this week, and it's Jerry Jones, not the head coach, announcing that. It's just, it's a weird dynamic
it
here
is.
In Dallas.
It is. I mean, you go all the way back to anything past Jimmy Johnson with Jerry, and by the way, I talk with Jerry and know Jerry, and he is unbelievably personable. He's fun to talk to. He is probably one of the most gifted of gab that I have ever met. I like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like the guy. But there's no doubt now. I mean, that ego is big with Jerry Jones, and he wants to be front and center. When you own the football team, you can do it however you like.
No doubt about it, especially with a team as high profile as the Dallas Cowboys, and they continue to be even in the middle of this kind of losing streak. Let's get back out to the phone line. 641-1010 is the number. Kurt up next in Julington Creek. What's going on today, Kurt?
Hey, fellas. Great show today.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get my hands around understanding. I know, you know, rules keep changing, you know, because we're trying to protect certain players or positions. But for the life of me, I have no idea. And, Jeff, I really would love to hear your perspective on this. I have no idea how they called a 15-yard penalty on Branch for what looked like a textbook hit in a quarterback's chest just as he released the ball. What do you say about that?
It really was a textbook example of what the league is trying to prohibit. You know, when Andre Branch comes in as opposed to Aaron Colvin, Aaron Colvin's helmet was kind of in the armpit of E.J. Manuel and below the shoulder, whereas when Andre Branch comes in, it's literally face mask to face mask. And, look, I know that the rules have changed, and I don't like them, but that's the rules and that you have to lower your target. You know, and the Andre Branch came in high. It was face mask to face mask, and any contact around a quarterback's head or neck area is going to be a flag. To me, that was an easy call for the official. You know, he had that penalty, and then he had the other one where he had hands to the face, and that's kind of been the history with Andre. He has high hands when he plays the game. I know that the previous coaching staff worked to be able to get his hands down. The current coaching staff has worked to get his hands down. It will make him a better player. It mm-hmm. will make him a stronger player, but it's not something that he has really taken the next step on. But that hit on the quarterback. I mean, that was an easy call.
Yeah, and look, I get frustrated with it too. You know, as a fan of football,
like
watching
it. I mean, it's football, right?
Right, and you're watching a guy.
That's the rule.
It feels like defensive guys are getting punished for making plays, and it's the rule that happens to be there. They're trying to protect guys. I can understand trying to protect them. And I know I get frustrated with it too, watching when they graze like the side of a helmet with a hand. And
like Clemens had in Indianapolis. Right. I mean, that's kind of tough, but that's the way they call it.
They got to know. Keep your hands down.
I mean, if the league is going to make an instructional video and to show, okay, these hits are the things that clearly we don't want, and here's the hits that we find acceptable, Andre Branch's hit on E.J. Manuel would have been in the category of, this is clearly what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
The hit that Aaron Colvin had would have been textbook, this is what we are encouraging.
Right. This is what we're trying to get guys mm-hmm. to do instead of what Andre Branch did. And talking about the front four, the pass rush a little bit here, Andre Branch, how has he looked since he came back? Does it look like he's getting better?
He's okay. I mean, he's getting better and he's moving better. You know, but I've said this before, and that Andre Branch is not a creator. I think he's more of a cleanup guy. And what I mean by that is that, you know, and he had a couple really good rushes in that game. He had one where he kind of powered against, and he was playing at that point against a guy that the Buffalo Bills had just elevated from the practice squad. And before the game, I was like, okay, who's number 79? It was a guy by the name of Tyson Chandler, a rookie from North Carolina State that played in that game. Because they had Quanjo in to start the game out, mm-hmm. and then for some reason Quanjo left the game, and then Tyson Chandler went into the game, and Andre had a really nice power rush on him. He had a couple other plays that I thought that he did good against Quanjo, who's a backup. But, you know, he's a guy that just needs somebody in the middle like Cinderic Marks to flush the quarterback or to get the quarterback off track to where then Andre, who plays the game with great energy, he flies around, he's got great speed, then he can utilize those type of things. But the one area that Andre has always been a little bit deficient in has been playing the game with power and using power to rush the passer. He's kind of a finesse guy.
One of the lightning rods for the fan base here for the last couple of weeks has been Chris Clemens, and really throughout the offseason. I know we had the fumble recovery for the touchdown. Outside of that, how did he play?
I mean, just okay. And a lot of fans get mad at Chris Clemens or upset with Chris Clemens. You know, Chris Clemens is still playing hard. I mean, he's giving you what he's got. I mean, I think what we're seeing is what he's got. And I don't have a problem with that, you know. First game he comes out, you know, after all the missed practices, et cetera, and he has a sack in the first game, and everybody's like, okay, that's good. And a veteran player, I wasn't overly concerned about him missing practice. I think, you know, as you see every week on the injury report, Chris Clemens gets the first day off of the week, which is a Wednesday practice, because they're trying to keep him, you know, fresh, because he's in his 12th year. He is slowing down. That's what happens when you get in your 12th year. It's not very often that a guy in his 12th year and above is just going to keep looking like he's a young man.
Right.
You know, so the biggest thing with me with Chris is, look, he's still playing hard. He's still making plays against the run. Can he be better? Yeah, I think he can be a little bit better, but it's not like I'm sitting there watching Chris Clemens going, man, that guy, he's not worth it. But he's still giving you everything he's got. I still say this, as I've said it before and many times, is that I want to see Ryan Davis get more repetitions.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not the role that Ryan Davis is getting right now. But I think that that's something also in the bye week that you need to look at and evaluate, because he's getting the rushes as a nickel lightning package rusher from the three technique. But I think he's capable of giving you more than what you're getting at the Leo spot, certainly at times.
And we talked about this, Mike and I, a lot last week when the word came out that they were benching Devon House for Dwayne Grotz. All right, after, you know, he fell asleep on that play against Houston, and whether they're trying to make an example out of him, whatever it happened to be, my thought was, if you're going to bench somebody because of performance and you're going to elevate somebody because of what they're giving you, then why isn't it Ryan Davis getting the opportunity at the Leo spot with two guys who they may be giving you everything they got, but it's not good enough because you're not able to generate anything really with just those guys being Clemens or Branch on the field. Maybe Davis gives you a spark as a pass rusher on first or second down. It was a curious move to me why it was House instead of Davis getting the opportunity.
Well, to talk about Devon House, you know, who had a really nice, what, first half, three quarters of play against the Texans,
yeah,
against DeAndre Hopkins. I think the reason for that is that you see what he was capable of doing in three quarters, and then you're like, okay, why can't you continue to do that in the fourth quarter? You know, so I think that was a move that was not really making a statement, because I don't think that Gus Bradley is into making statements, but I think what it is that, look, the expectations that we have for you, Devon, is that you can carry that play level of play through four quarters, and that they expect more, not that they expect more out of him, but they know he's capable of better and finishing the game as strong as he started it. And Dwayne Grotz had a very good preseason, had the injury early this year, has come back and has looked good when he's been on the field in the nickel situation, because Colvin goes to the nickel and then Grotz comes in and plays one of the corner spots. But Dwayne Grotz was not very good now. Dwayne Grotz did not have a good game against the Buffalo Bills. The one long touchdown that he gave up, did not even have his attention on the guy that was in his deep third. He was peeking at an inside route, which you can't do because the safety's there to do that, and the linebacker's there to help carry that route. And then the long completion to the tight end, Chris Gregg, that was him all day long. He's chasing a crossing route going across the field, and there goes the tight end. Unfortunately, Dan Scuda saw that Dwayne Grotz wasn't there and then runs down the field. Unfortunately, Gregg has to fall down to catch the ball, and Scuda's able to tag him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of been the M.O. with Dwayne Grotz a little bit, and that he has talent, but all of a sudden you'll have a mental lapse. But he's talented, you know. And I think that the other reason they wanted to get Grotz on the field is because you're facing a team that doesn't have Percy Harvin, that does not have Sammy Watkins. Their greatest weapon is the running back, LeSean McCoy. Devon House's strength is not tackling. Dwayne Grotz is a very good tackler. And when you play the corner and they're on the edge and they're setting the edge, that's what you want to have, certainly be very solid against the Buffalo Bills. So I think there was kind of a twofold reason for that change, to get Devon House to be able to play at a high level longer throughout the course of the game because they know he's capable of more, and then also to get Dwayne Grotz's tackling on the field against the greatest weapon the Bills have in LeSean McCoy.
Well, as you said, Grotz didn't have a very good game. What about quickly House? How did he respond, you know, not being given that starting, quote, job with three guys on the field a lot?
Man, when he was on the field, I thought he was really good. And I'm going to show this. I'm going to actually sit down with Gus for the Gus Bradley Show that this week, it typically in weeks past, it airs on Saturday night and Sunday morning. This week, though, they have the special on Channel 4 this week on Saturday night, which is the Send Derek Marks rehabilitation process from where he started to where he's at now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Gus Bradley Show is going to air only on Sunday morning. I'm going to sit down with the film on Gus and go over the game-winning drive and the key plays on that drive, which the three of them won, two of them Allen Robinson, the one Allen Hurns, and then also the play that was made by Aaron Colvin to close that game out.
Yeah.
The reason that Aaron Colvin was able to make that play, Aaron Colvin is in the nickel position, which is there's two wide receivers. If you're lining up as a safety, there's two wide receivers to the right. Colvin is lined up on the slot. Devon House is lined up on the outside receiver. It's a rub route. It's fourth and one. And so the outside receiver's objective is to run a quick slant route to the inside and try to knock off the man coverage on Aaron Colvin on the wide receiver. I think it was Robert Woods. And so as the wide receiver on the outside, and I think that was Hogan, runs this slant route and trying to rub Colvin off, Devon House gets a phenomenal jam. I mean, he literally rides him down the line of scrimmage to where that wide receiver can't rub Aaron Colvin off, and actually Devon forces the wide receiver to rub his own receiver off. And so it allowed Aaron Colvin an extremely flat route to be able to make that play and bat it down. So, I mean, that play by Devon House, which probably went totally unrecognized, might have been his greatest play in the game.
Yeah, I'm glad that you pointed it out. I didn't recognize that on the play, only having seen it the one time basically live, but clearly a great play, wound up winning the game for the Jacksonville Jaguars there on fourth down. He's Jeff Loggeman. I'm Tony Smith here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. We'll come back, get some more of your calls in, 641-1010. Want to talk a little bit about some of the other guys on defense. Telvin Smith obviously had a phenomenal day for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll get into some of that as we continue along here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. We're asking you today, Jaguars fans, outside of Blake Bortles, what second or third year player are you most encouraged by their progress to this point in the 2015 season? A lot of potential answers there. We'll get to that a little bit later on. At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, at 1010XL Tyler as well. If you want to get your answers in, we may pick somebody to win a t-shirt a little bit later on today, Jaguars Today t-shirt. Getting back out to the phone lines right now, let's get to Christoph all the way over in the UK, who wants to talk a little bit about that London game where he got to see his Jaguars win on Sunday. What's going on, Christoph?
I'm very good. Yourself?
Doing well.
How's Jeff?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Christoph.
I was just got a question for Jeff. This has obviously been our third game over at Wembley Stadium, and we played against a less marquee team than San Francisco and Dallas, and I was just wondering how you thought the atmosphere was for the game. Have you noticed it getting louder every year as the years progress, or is it still kind of, you know, like a mixed crowd, or is it still kind of quiet compared to Everbank Field? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Christoph, and for calling in. Yeah, I think the first year it was kind of indifferent, you know, in that exciting plays were cheered regardless of who did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas this year it was very, very different, you know, in that the Jaguars, when they made big plays, the place, it was like, I mean, it felt like, okay, this is the Jaguars' home game. And the one thing, though, that I was trying to figure out, and I had to ask a few people to kind of let me know what's going on, was that when they played on the big boards, you know, the video boards that they had there at Wembley,
They
would say, make, you know, when the Jaguars defense was on the field, they'd put a thing up there, and just like you see here at Everbank, obviously not as big, but it would say, make some noise. And, you know, you're trying to make some noise because the opponent's offense, the Buffalo Bills offense, is on the field. And it sounded like boos.
Yeah.
Okay, and I was like, somebody's got to explain this to me. Are they booing? As I came to find out, that's how they make noise at Wembley. That's what they do. And so then I said, well, what do they do to boo? And then I was told that they whistle.
Yeah, they whistle. At soccer,
I didn't
they
know
whistle.
That.
Yeah.
So I was kind of confused. I'm
so
like,
if you're there watching a game next year and they start whistling, it's because
it's
they're
not
upset.
Good.
Yeah.
It's not good. No, but it was great because when the Jaguars made, you know, positive plays, I mean, it was cheering, and every seat at Wembley had Jaguars flags and they were waving, and it felt like a home game. Whereas the first year it was like, eh, but of course, you know, the games kind of dictated some of that too.
Sure.
Now. You know, because the first 2 years, you know, the first year against the 49ers, the second year against the Cowboys, I mean, it wasn't really much of a game. But it was exciting. It was awesome. The fans stayed till the end. I'm sure that they were highly entertained. But it was certainly much different than years one and year two. And it was actually a lot of fun to kind of see it. And I'm glad that I understand now what their cheering is about.
Yeah, I saw Hicken tweeting out about it too during the game. He's like, they're asking the fans to get loud and they boo. I don't understand what's happening out here.
Yeah.
And, you're dealing with soccer culture. That's what's happening out there.
There's definitely a soccer culture because the first couple days when I was there, you know, right there at Wembley, Now, there's a mall right attached to where we were staying at.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of people in and out. And the number of soccer balls, you know, you got the young kids, you know, that are, you know, teenagers or whatever going back and forth up and down to school or wherever they were going. You saw a lot of soccer balls. But it was cool too in that the day that was Friday and a little bit Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday, the number of footballs that were in and around the stadium that were playing catch, et cetera, with some of the kids, I mean, it was crazy.
That's cool.
I mean, that was cool to see, you know, that that you can see that football has certainly caught the eye of a lot of the people over there. And it's, you know, if you would see adults, you know, throwing the football around, you would go, okay, you know, they kind of maybe a little bit of fans. But then when you see, you know, the 9, the 10-year-olds, 11, 12-year-olds, and they're playing catch and they've got their football, you know, before the game, it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat to see.
And that's where you're going to see the growth in the game is kids growing up loving it for the next 10 years. And we'll see if that plan works.
And there's organized football over there. From talking to some different people. In fact, I talked to one young man who was at the event on Saturday, and he said that he's flag football, plays quarterback in flag football, mm-hmm. and then he wanted to play flag football, and he was 14 years old, and that next year he was going to play contact football. You know, so they obviously have organized football over there, and then more kids are starting to grow up, but you could tell that this kid was eat up with football. You know, and he's a London native, and this is what he wants to do, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome to hear those kinds of stories. Let's get back out to the phone lines and get one more in here. Phil on the south side, what's going on today, Phil?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. This is, you know, beyond the last game, just looking at the bigger picture. Obviously the owners pay attention to what's happening in the league, and if I were Shad Khan, here's what would really catch my attention, and then I'll bring it back to the Jags, But, you know, what Dan Campbell has done in two games, you take a team, and I'll just give you two stats here. One is average first half points in the Philbin three games, 6 points a half to 30 points a half in two games. And then, and not average, but just total sacks in three games under Philbin, total sacks, one sack, total sacks in two games versus three, 10 sacks. So you take the same group of guys with different leadership. And that's what would really catch my attention. I mean, so I'm just wondering, you know, what might happen with that. Because, you know, it just reminds me with Del Rio and the years, you know, all those years of not making progress. It's just not a league where you can wait around. I mean, you can wait a couple, 2-3 years, but you can't wait around much longer, you know?
Okay, so my question to you, Phil, would be, okay, if you're the owner, what are you doing with that information?
I think you have to really evaluate.
No, I don't want to hear that you want to evaluate. I don't want to hear you, you know, I want to hear you make a decision. What are you going to do?
I'm telling you right now. I'm saying you immediately evaluate if your coach has the right kind of leadership skills. In other words, when you see him clapping on the sideline after a turnover, or excuse me, after the touchdown, I'm just telling you that that's what I would do is immediately evaluate.
Okay, so you evaluate, right, what are you going to do?
Well, then you decide pretty quickly whether if your evaluation is accurate, that you have the right person, you keep them. If you don't, you don't. What I'm saying is you can see very stark results there in a turnaround immediately with the same personnel. So I'm not saying fire somebody. I'm saying make sure you're evaluating and making the right decision.
Okay. Now, with Dan Campbell, there has been, I don't know how many coaching changes that's happened in league history at some point during the season.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to look at how many of them have had a positive impact and how many have. I mean, the percentage is very low. Now, you bring up a point about sacks, okay? They had however many sacks with Joe Philbin, and now that they've got Dan Campbell, they've got 10 sacks in two games. Okay, well, they have Cameron Wake, Ndamukong Suh,
mm-hmm.
Olivier Vernon, and do the Jaguars have Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, or Ndamukong Suh?
No.
So I think you also evaluate what you have, okay? Are the Jaguars capable of having individuals to do more if you have a coaching change? I don't see that. I don't. I mean, I'm looking at the Jaguars defensively, that this was an area that obviously they felt they needed to address. You've got Cedric Marks recovering from an ACL. The guy that you tried to address the pass rush with, Dante Fowler, is on injury reserve. He tore his ACL. You have tried to make improvements. You'd like to see more out of your free agent acquisition from the Miami Dolphins in Jared Odrick. So, you know, my whole point is here is that when you evaluate what he's done in Miami, you also have to evaluate what has historically been done with coaching changes that have happened in mid-stride. For the most part, historically speaking, they have had no impact. You know, a bad team is a bad team. The Miami Dolphins are built to win now. They're not filled with teams that have a 23-year-old quarterback with two wide receivers that are 23 and 22 and are playing and not even their full second season yet. So, So there's a lot of things to look at. And I think Shad's got it right. And look, you commit to them and say, look, we're not going to do anything willy-nilly and reactionary or emotional decisions. We need to, like we will always do, we finish a season and we evaluate it at that point. And in no way, shape, or form does what Dan Campbell's done in Miami should not impact what the Jaguars do, because historically that decision has had zero change in the output or production of a team.
Philbin got fired because they have Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh and Olivier Vernon and right. a 23-year-old quarterback they just paid and Jarvis Landry, and the running game wasn't working. Like, that's why Philbin got fired, is because it wasn't working mm-hmm. with him. I think there are a lot of fans that have made up their mind on Gus Bradley, and that's fair. Fans can think whatever they want to think.
They're entitled to their opinion.
Right. But in fairness to this Jaguars team and to Gus Bradley, there's no way to look at what they've done and not see growth. I think there's a frustration from fans that they felt like coaching decisions, things that have happened in games, have gotten in the way of this team winning more than two games this year. And I think that frustration is fair, too, which is why I'm more in the court of let this thing play out for 2015 and make the right decision with what you're going to do with your head coach after the 2015 season, and you see how this thing plays out. You don't have to make it now, though.
You evaluate every year. You know, as an owner, you evaluate every year. As a general manager, you evaluate every year. As a head coach, you evaluate every year. You know, last year, the offense was not making progress. Gus evaluated at the end of the year, makes a change. And I think we're seeing significant growth on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing significant growth in the quarterback. We're certainly seeing growth with the running game. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, at the end of the year, you evaluate that as well. And then you evaluate the coaches, you evaluate the personnel, and then you go from there. And I think that all of those will take place. But at this point in the season, with a rebuild to where it's at, I think it would be absolutely emotional to look at even evaluating it at this point.
And your owner, if you're a Jaguars fan out there, your owner, we played the comment on the Publix tailgate show on Sunday when asked about the decision to not make any kind of change with the head coach or anything in the 2015 season, said it's the only sane and rational thing to do. So that's where he's at. And fans are wherever they're at. And again, you're allowed to have your own opinion on what's going on with this team. And we thank you that you do. But that's where your owner's at right now. So you're just banging your head against the wall if your idea every week is going to be it's time to fire Gus Bradley. We got the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight coming up here in just a moment. We'll take a look at some of these second and third year guys we talked about on the offense just a moment ago, Jeff, that are blooming here coming into their careers, and guys on defense as well. We haven't talked a lot about Telvin today. We'll get into that as we continue along here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hey, that's outstanding. I don't know what to say, man. You talk about grit, huh? You talk about grit, longer and harder. Your guys' faith was unbelievable on that sideline. It got tested, didn't it? It got tested, but you stayed strong. You stayed strong throughout the whole thing, man.
That's your head coach, Gus Bradley, speaking in the locker room after the Jaguars come-from-behind win against the Buffalo Bills. It didn't look like it was going to need to be a come-from-behind win there for a long time, but in the end, they needed that last drive from Blake Bortles, the connection with Allen Hurns, and then the defense stepping up and getting the stop to get the Jaguars their second victory of the season. Thanks to our friends over there at Jaguars.com for that sound. And I think it's, we mentioned it early in the show, Jeff, but I think it's really important for this football team. It would have been catastrophic for them to lose that football game. I think it's equally important to have, for them to have won it the way they did, where when everything is collapsing and has been for the last month, for your franchise quarterback to step out there on the field and make plays and respond in a moment like that, which we haven't seen him do much in his career. He's put the team in a lot of bad positions and not been able to find himself after that. He's done it a couple times this year, but never in a spot as big as that.
No, but, you know, I go back to last year, the game against Tennessee in Tennessee, to where he gave this football team a chance to win, you know. But the team just hasn't been good enough to where they could overcome things like that. And I think that they're getting to that point. You know, the exciting thing for me in that game is that, first of all, is that they were able to fight through to come back and to get the win with a group of players that are very young. You know, A-Rob, Allen Hurns, and obviously Blake Bortles, and then defensively the plays that were made by the young players, Telvin Smith, Aaron Colvin. I mean, that's big-time stuff, you know. And I know you want to talk about Telvin, and I'll talk a little bit about him right here. Telvin Smith has always been very strong because he just got great speed. You know, but Telvin is one of those players that he's not going to be awesome against the run when the traffic gets busy because he doesn't have the size, and I hope that he continues to add weight in his career. But, you know, he's a player that has to be able to make impactful plays, whether it be interceptions, pass breakups, going on the blitz and pressuring, covering key guys man-to-man, because, you know, when the Jaguars match up against a team that have a great running back or a great tight end, he's the guy that typically draws the coverage because he's got great speed. And those are all the things that you want to see him do, but the next step was really what he was lacking this year, was the impactful plays and to be able to make the plays that he did. He almost had two interceptions, the one that could have stopped the one drive there.
Yeah.
And he had another opportunity at an interception, which he didn't trust himself enough. And then he was reading the eyes of E.J. Manuel, once again staring a guy down. He just didn't trust it. And I think that all those things come with experience, and I think that he will eventually get more of that, obviously, because the more he plays, the better he's going to be. But he needs to continue to make impactful plays because he's special now. I mean, how many linebackers do you have in the league that can legitimately run, you know, in the 4.4s? I mean, he's a legitimate 4.4 guy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy fast.
And the combination of him and Colvin certainly look like they could both be significant building blocks for this defense going forward. And you're hoping that Dante Fowler Jr. is going to be one of those guys. And if you have all three levels, plus whatever you can add as far as speed, really, in that linebacker core. Puzlesny is a good player. He's a smart, instinctive football player. But at some point, they're going to have to replace that middle linebacker, and yeah, hopefully with a guy with a bit more speed.
Well, no, there's no issue with Paul's speed. I mean, that's, you know, you're good with the middle linebacking position. Paul Posluszny is a very good football player. You know, I think a lot of times we take him for granted, and we're like, okay, well, he's not as great in coverage as he should be. Hey, look, Paul is one of the better linebackers in the league. I'm not saying he's elite. But it's not like you can find guys walking around that are Paul Posluszny. Trust me, you can't. In a perfect world, what you'd like to have is to seriously address the defense in the offseason, whether it be through the draft and through free agency, and you've already tried to address it through the draft this year with Dante Fowler, but you're going to have to do more next year. You would like to have Dan Scuda to be a role player and a backup. You would like to have better production out of Jonathan Cyprian, consistent production. I think that they need to continue to work to get more out of him on a consistent basis, to where you don't have a great game at Indianapolis and then a poor game against the Houston Texans and then a solid game against the Buffalo Bills. You know, he needs to be able to take the next step. You know, I think in the secondary, at corner position, I think you feel pretty good about where you're at with Aaron Colvin. I think Devon House will get better. Grotz is a guy that's a rotational guy. Peyton Thompson, who I never even saw in the preseason, when he's been on the field, he's a feisty guy. I like him. Nick Marshall will continue to develop. When James Sample is able to stay on the field on a consistent basis, I think that he's going to contend for time with Jonathan Cyprian at that strong safety position. So, you know, but you need to find guys next year that can affect the quarterback, whether it be on the interior or on the edge, because Andre Branch's contract is going to be up. Chris Clemens will be in his 13th year next year. You're probably going to end up not having those guys back. So there, you know, Cendric Marks will be a year better, you know, from his rehabilitation process with the ACL. But the defensive side of the ball is an area that has to be looked at next year.
And you certainly think it would be. That's at least the way that it feels right now. And like you said, they tried to with Dante, and it's unfortunate that he got injured when he did, and we haven't had the opportunity to see him on the field. The Fan Feedback Spotlight, Tom Bush Family Dealership, asks Jaguar fans, what drives you? Some of the responses we got today to our question saying, outside of Blake Bortles, who are you most impressed with, or are you most encouraged by some of the progress that you have seen from this football team thus far? And it's a bunch of the answers that you would expect for this football team.
Easy.
Yeah, for this football team right now. As, let's see, pull them up here from Daniel. Tie between the two Allens at the top. Behind them would clearly be Telvin. Hashtag love the progress. From Alvaro, Calvin and Telvin, Allen and Allen, I'm beginning to forget Justin Blackman. From Eric, of all of them, I'd say Allen Hurns. From undrafted to where he is now, his growth shows a lot of potential.
That one's dead on the money.
From Desert Duval, Colvin, A-Rob, Hearns, Telvin. Mike's not there, but blame it on the crown. From T-Rich, Telvin Smith will be a five-time Pro Bowler and is our franchise linebacker of the future. Hashtag Knoll Nation. Got one for the Allens in there on Facebook. Obvious answer, the A-team. How can you not be excited right now with Hurns and Robinson? We haven't had a solid tandem like this for over a decade. Bortles is the most promising quarterback since Burnell. That from Joshua. From Tony, Telvin Smith, Gold Nose, Gold Jags. From Dustin, the Allens. Wondering why local media focus more on Marquise Lee potential instead of weekly production by Hurns and Robinson. That's not what we do on this show, at least, there, Dustin. But from Ryan, Allen Robinson. From Cameron, honestly, Luke Jokel has shown improvement, but I think it's a tie for me between the Allens and Telvin. So a lot of the answers you'd expect, and it's encouraging to have this many young guys growing up at the same time. We've talked about, you know, over the course of the last month and some of the losses they've suffered, would they be better off with a couple veterans in that locker room? Yeah, they probably would, but you're watching these young guys grow up at the same time, and hopefully they turn into those kind of veteran presences in your locker room over the course of the next couple months, Jeff.
Well, look, I like what the wide receivers are doing. I mean, you look at the numbers, and Allen, I call him the A-team, Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. You know, both of these guys, I think, in the National Football League, with any receiver that has more than, I think, 30 catches or whatever it is, which is the guys that are getting the primary role, they lead the league in yards per reception with the two of them, with Allen Robinson at 17.2 and Allen Hurns at 16.5. I mean, that's impressive stuff.
Especially, you know, with their catch numbers.
Well, and you've got 11 touchdowns between the two of them. Blake Bortles' numbers are certainly getting better. He's almost nearly 2-to-1 touchdown interceptions. And if you actually consider his pick sixes as touchdowns for him, it would be at a much greater level.
He'd
you know?
Be phenomenal.
Yeah, but you know, you like the progress with them. The offensive line has been by far the biggest area of improvement from last year to this year. Credit Dave Caldwell, credit Doug Marrone, and also credit Blake Bortles, because his ability to play better makes them have the ability to be better.
All right, Jeff, what do you got coming up the rest of this week?
Hopefully not a whole lot, Tony. You know, I'm going to take some time off and enjoy the bye week myself, but I know that we have the Gus Bradley radio show Thursday night, Jaguars Thursday after that. That's the 6 to 8 hour block here on 1010. I'm going to take a little time off from the outdoor show to do a little research.
Nice.
But we still have the Gus Bradley TV show, which will air on Sunday morning this week. And Dave Caldwell will be our special guest in the second segment.
Very cool. And we'll see you next Tuesday as we take a look back probably a little bit more at the whole of the first seven games for the Jaguars thus far and get ready for that matchup up against the New York Jets. Fun show today, Jeff. Glad that you could come.